You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
New Zealand, Australia and many countries are experiencing a further Omicron wave driven by the latest BA4/BA5 sub-variants. Our response to this threat is remarkably laissez-faire, I believe how you pronounce it, compared with past approaches, as society has pivoted more to living with the virus. Both in New Zealand and Australia, there is a real risk current. A real risk current policy settings will be insufficient to prevent health services being overwhelmed, and more will need to be done in coming weeks. Now, I spoke to Professor Michael Baker from the Department of Public Health at the University of Otago in Wellington on the matter, and I started off by asking him his thoughts on the situation and if New Zealand does need to be doing more. Here he is now.
Yes, they're good questions. And as the article points out, there's no simple answer, of course, or we'd be doing it. But it's saying that at the moment, countries are all on a spectrum from most extreme control measures, and obviously that's mainland China, through to countries that have almost failed states that are actually doing very poorly indeed. And somewhere like Russia, for instance, they've lost almost 1% of their population from COVID-19. They've got a population of 120 million. They've had almost a million deaths. So that's the most laissez-faire, almost a failed state in terms of how it's managing COVID-19. Now, New Zealand is in Australia, and several countries in the Asia-Pacific region have done extremely well. And that's based on the measures like cumulative mortality through the pandemic. And what countries in New Zealand and Australia, like Australia and New Zealand, did was they basically eliminated the virus largely for the first 2 years of the pandemic until we got good vaccines and good vaccine coverage. That's meant we avoided all of that mortality that would have occurred and in fact had long periods of minimal restrictions. Now, of course, we've joined the rest of the world. We are living with the virus, if you like, and of course we've got the far more infectious Omicron variant. And so over time, it's going to infect quite a high portion of the population. So the question is, what settings are going to give us the best outcomes? And our view is that because of all of the consequences of getting this infection and getting it over and over again, getting reinfected, we want to head towards quite a tight or a suppression approach where we actually avoid the infection, rather than just a more laissez-faire approach of saying, well, we'll just get back to normal and to some extent pretend it isn't happening. And so we can see that is not would not be a great strategy for anywhere, I don't think, because the evidence is that every time you get this virus, or you can be reinfected within 3 weeks, and there's evidence now from big cohort studies overseas that each time you get reinfected, you get most of the same effects as with the first infection. That is the risk of getting seriously ill, going to hospital, dying, and also having long COVID. So that's the problem. And we would say on public health grounds, there's a case for using all the tools we've got in a sensible way to really turn that tap down on case numbers as much as we can.
Yeah. Now, what does preventing infection look like? Does this mean?
Well, I think the core approach government's taking is very sound, and they're promoting really four main strategies. Three are the ones we've heard over and over again about preventing infection, and that is getting high vaccine coverage and boosters, and secondly, and that also protects you as well as people around you. The second one, of course, is staying home if you're sick, so self-isolation for 7 days, that's really important. And the third one, of course, is trying to limit transmission between you and other people. And quite often, people won't know they've got the infection, they're out and about, and they're infecting their workmates or schoolmates or people at a social event. And so that's where masks come in. And I think everyone understands now that masks do two things. They limit the aerosol you generate if you're wearing a good mask, and they also give you some personal protection if you're wearing a mask. And there's very good evidence that if both of you are wearing a mask and one of you has got COVID-19, the other person has a very low risk of getting the infection if you're, as I say, wearing a good quality mask and you're wearing it properly. And there's a study just came out 2 weeks ago saying it's about a 75-fold reduction in transmission risk if you're doing it right. And that's one reason why healthcare workers wear masks all the time and don't get sick, because masks really do work. So they're the three main strategies there. And the fourth one that's new now is making antivirals available if you are older and at higher risk of a serious outcome. And if you can, if you take these oral antivirals for a few days, it greatly reduces your risk of getting seriously ill. I mean, these drugs really work. And so that's a new advance in New Zealand. So I think collectively we're heading in the right direction. Myself and others in public health have argued the one element that's really missing at the moment is greater mandating of mask use in indoor environments, and particularly in schools where we know a lot of transmission happens.
One of the points that you mentioned is that, I'll go back to mask use. Mask use in New Zealand is a lot, I want to say, more frequent than it is in Australia, especially when it comes to indoors. And you've also made the comparison between other measures in place, that being income support for people who test positive. You know, obviously between New Zealand and Australia, there's also a difference between like a mandatory self-isolation as well. And yeah, you've also pointed out is either country getting it right as well. New Zealand seems to be getting it, seems to be winning, getting it more right than Australia is. However, getting policy settings right over the long haul is more about having, more than just having the most favourable assessment on some selected but important criteria. And if the goal is to minimise hospitalisations, deaths and long-term illness, there's an argument for minimising infections by shifting from mitigation towards a suppression strategy.
Yeah, look, there isn't a sharp dividing line between mitigation and suppression. I mean, mitigation is the approach we had in our old influenza pandemic plan, and the criteria there was we just simply don't, we won't overwhelm the health system, but otherwise we accept that everyone's going to get the virus. And the problem with that is things like long COVID, the risk seems to occur every time you get the infection. So we might have enough information and at some point in the future to say, no, we really, it would have been better just to have let the virus circulate quite widely because it's not that damaging. But I actually think from the data we've got at the moment that it is damaging actually for people to keep getting this infection. We are going to create a lot of people with long-term disability as a result, and therefore we have to try and keep numbers really low. So that means just doing everything that we've got, or using all our tools a bit better than we might be at the moment. And that would just mean really promoting getting fully vaccinated. It would mean probably trying to accelerate the arrival of the next generation of vaccines, you know, the bivalent vaccines that are being developed that will have greater protection against Omicron, possibly promoting antiviral use more widely. I mean, it's just moving up the scale in terms of how vigorously we try and keep the numbers down. And the other thing that concerns me is just simply the number of deaths that's mounting up. And if you look, yesterday we hit the point of having a moving average of 22 deaths a day. Now, that's the highest we've ever had since the pandemic started. And if you just look at what that means over a whole year, you know, that's over 5,000 deaths. I'm sure it won't stay that high, but it hasn't dropped below 10 deaths a day, the moving average, for most of this year now. So that's effectively going to be 10, 15 times the road toll within a year. It's moving into the realm of being potentially 10 times the burden of influenza every year in terms of mortality. And in addition, lots of people in the hospital, and that means a lot of elective surgery gets cancelled. So it's a real drain on resources and leaves a lot of people having to put up with conditions that could have been treated for. So it's all of these flow-on effects of just having a lot of people getting infected every day.
That was Professor Michael Baker from the Department of Public Health at the University of Otago, Wellington, speaking about how New Zealand and Australia can deal with COVID waves during winter.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.